Let's open to Luke in chapter 22 today. You see, I'm a Montana farm boy. And when I came out here some years ago, a friend, a neighbor pointed out to me, I should go on Father's Day out to Pottsville. They have a big tractor show out there every year. And I'm fascinated with machinery. I love machinery. I love to see it operate. I love to know what makes it work and what the purpose of it is, what keeps it going. And out there, I think it was the second year, they had a huge old threshing machine, and they hooked up to it with this long belt off a steam-driven tractor, and they put that threshing machine to work and threw in some sheaves of grain, and out the back they started bagging grain. And they were selling the bags, you know. Anyway, I thought, wow, back to the farm days. It wasn't quite that far back for me, but we had a combine, a big monster threshing machine, and we, as a young'un on the farm, I would drive that and cut the grain, process it. And you, trying to keep machinery going, you begin to understand what makes it function, what keeps it going. A lot of plug-ups, you know, stop the machine, shut it down, be safe, don't put your arm in there when it's running, but get it unclogged or whatever it takes to keep it going. Well, here in Luke chapter 22, some fascinating things are happening, for this is the Last Supper, and Jesus and his disciples there, and we find they have the supper, and Jesus begins to explain things in a new perspective to them, try to help them see what he's doing. And after supper, amazingly, the disciples get into this rivalry about who's the greatest, just after Jesus had explained to them, you know, the importance of humility and feeding on him. Verse 27, Luke chapter 22. Who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I am among you as one who serves. And you? You are those who have continued with me in my trials. So he's correcting them, but he's encouraging them. Says, look, you've stuck it out with me. But he's also saying, if you listen between the lines, he says, you have much more to stick it out. You have much more to endure, much more to learn. And he makes this incredible promise, I bestow upon you a kingdom. Of course, some of them were expecting it then. We know now it's yet ahead of us. To sit on thrones, just as my Father gave me a kingdom and I sit with my Father, so you will sit with me on thrones and judge. But between the lines, you have much to learn about judging. Especially of themselves. If they were competing among themselves, who was the greatest? And so verse 31, and the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat, may thresh you, may run you through that big threshing machine like they do to wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned, strengthen your brethren. But Peter, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Now there's a man of confidence. Confidence is good. I'm not sure if Peter's confidence was well placed at that time. For the Lord said to him, I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. Wow. You know, God has a plan for individuals, for you, just as he had for Peter. God's plan is not dependent on us never making mistakes. He knows we make mistakes. He knew Peter was going to make a huge mistake. God has an answer for every failure. See, he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But he's not the God of the perfect. But Jesus Christ was perfect. And so, yes, Jesus said, my Father and my God. But we are not yet perfect. He certainly is the God of the faithful, even though we stumble. And so I look at passages like this, and whenever I hear a message or read a message, I take it personally. So what's happening here to Peter? is happening to me personally. I can learn from this. Verse 31, the Lord said, Simon, Simon. See, he'd already given Simon the name Peter. You are a rock. But he's taking it back. It's almost like my mother when I was in trouble. Fred, Carl. You know, when that name came up, I better pay attention. And so here the Lord is Simon, Simon, not Peter the rock. But Simon, you need to hear. You need to pay attention. I don't know if that was his in trouble name, but it certainly is to catch my attention and yours. And when it says Satan has asked, Satan demanded. He didn't just ask. The implication in the word is he demanded. Satan demanded to try these apostles. And you, he has asked for you, for the group. He's asked for all, not just Peter specifically in this verse. The you is plural. Speaking of all, Satan wanted to sift. He wanted to thresh and see how much wheat, how much grain was really in all that chaff and straw of the whole group. But the next verse, Jesus speaks to him specifically. He says, I have prayed for you, singular. I have prayed for you specifically, Simon. See, he is again between the lines, Simon, you have an incredible responsibility. Many people are going to look to you. This group is going to look to you. Maybe Simon was in the greatest danger, for one of the 12 had already fallen, hadn't he? Judas had already fallen. Was it going to be dominoes through the rest? Or was Peter going to be the domino that stood? And thereby others could stand by his strength. Well, Peter had the confidence, didn't he? Verse 33, Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Peter was a confident man, but unfortunately self-confident. Hold our place there in Luke and let's look in Mark in chapter 14. Speak some, a different perspective on this. Mark in chapter 14. Verse 27 of Mark. Then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. All of you will. It's written. It's already been known and understood that this is where you're going, that you will all stumble. This night, he says, and he quotes what is written. I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. There's no doubt. It will be done. It's in the plan. It's in the script, and we are scripted ourselves. We will stumble. I stumble. I don't know how many bruises and scabs I have on my shins and knees. I probably need more. And that's okay. He says, after I have been raised, Mark 14:28, I will go before you to Galilee. And it's like they didn't hear that at all. They plumb missed that. As other places, we understand that. But Peter said to him, even if all are made to stumble, yet I will not. And Jesus said to him again, you will deny me three times again. And verse 31, but he, Peter, spoke more vehemently. If I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And all of them said, yeah, I wouldn't deny you. How could they? I mean, it must have seemed outrageous what Christ had said to those who had been with him, who were his dear friends. Well, there's a proverb that says, you know, the one who trusts in himself is a fool. Proverbs 28. And they had that to learn yet. And they had to learn it sometimes over and over again. For all would fall away. But truly, that was part of the plan. That there is an adversary. There is one who makes to stumble, puts stumbling blocks ahead of us. So let's look again back to Luke 22 in verse 31. See, I like to go over and over again and see how these things function, how this machinery operates, and what's the output for you or for me. Verse 31, the Lord said, Simon, indeed, Satan has asked for you. You see, Satan and God talk about us. They talk about us. Revelation 12 says that Satan is the accuser of the brethren. Yes, he's the accuser of the group, but accuser of individuals, each one of us. And he has much chaff and straw that he winnowed out of me. You know, my name comes up. I fear. I hope that you tremble because your name comes up. Job discovered that, didn't he? Job discovered that very powerfully, that Satan talks with God and brings up things that maybe we've even forgot ourselves about ourselves. Some things I would love to forget. But God was always in control. We see that lesson so powerful in the book of Job, that Satan came and tried Job in every way he could, except to bring him to the point of death, although Job wished he could have died. He hurt that bad in his heart and in his flesh. But God drew a line. He says, this far and no farther. It's like the waves of the ocean. God said when he created the oceans, he told them, this far and no more you can come. Life comes at us sometimes like waves or trials, but this far and no more. That's enough. God knows what our limit is, and he never tests us beyond what we are able. Even when we think we're not able, he knows. You see, Jesus told Peter, I have prayed for you way before it all came to pass. And he's prayed for you and for you and for me way before we're tested and tried. Jesus has already interceded. He's made the way of escape possible for us. You know, Moses, back when he was leading the tribes of Israel, he spoke candidly with God about the Israelites and their problems. Read Paul's writings to the churches. He spoke openly and candidly. He did not shy away from the facts of our life and our lives, whether as a group or individually. Face it, because God talks about it with our accuser. So we need to talk with God about it and get it cleared up. That's part of this message here. See, God knows that you and I are going to fail. He knew Peter was going to fail. He says he prayed that his faith would not fail. But when it has, when you've stumbled, get up, and when you come back. See, he knew what was going on. He was telling Peter, but did Peter have ears to hear? I hope that we have ears to hear. I want to hear these things and see how it is that God's operating this machinery that's threshing out the chaff and the wheat and the weed seeds and the bugs. It's amazing the things that were separated out in that combine as it went through the field. Everything that went in the feed chute had to get separated and go one way or the other. Fascinating machinery. Jesus Christ knew Judas would betray him. Let's hold our place there in Luke and let's turn to John in chapter 6. You know, there many of these things are so familiar that we've read so many times, but I'm not ashamed of the truth that we've read so many times. It's like the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher, used to say, the truth. It's the same old thing. The truth is always the same old thing, she said. And that's where our confidence is. That this same old truth for Peter is the same truth for us now. John chapter 6. A big long passage, but verse 64, he says, there are some of you who do not believe, for Jesus knew from the beginning who they were who did not believe and who would betray him. He knew who was the tare among the wheat before the wheat was harvested and run through the threshing machine. Some disbelieved, one betrayed. I don't see anywhere where it says that Jesus prayed for Judas. I'm not saying he didn't. I just don't see it recorded. For it was necessary that the scripture be fulfilled. There had to be one that betrayed him to fulfill the scripture. I would imagine that Jesus Christ did discuss with the Father about Judas, and maybe some talk with the accuser as well. You see, our God is not just the God of the perfected. He's our God. He's my God. So here I am and here we are. But in Isaiah it says many times, you know, that there is none like me, God claims. There's none seeing the end from the beginning. See, he's created all this and he's written it and recorded it for us, for our instruction. The scriptures were the New Testament. It says very clearly that the Old Testament was written for our instruction, for our opportunity to see the mistakes. Understand then that I make mistakes and that there's an answer. There's a way out. There's help. Our God sees from ancient times the things that are not yet done, but they will be done. And the way out is done. We just have to keep coming back to it. We get to. Thank you, Mr. Babb. We get to keep coming back to the way out. You know, back in Exodus, Moses was leading those people and God says, get out of my way so I can destroy them. For indeed, they are a stiff-necked people. God knew when he called Israel what they were like. You know, Judas, all the years that he walked with Messiah, he heard the same things that the rest of the disciples heard, the same things Peter heard. He was there from the beginning. He heard all of Jesus Christ's teaching. He saw all his miracles, and yet he had set his heart. Because, see, he was like Peter. He had a confidence that he knew what needed to be done, that he knew what was right, that he knew how to take care of the situation. And so, you know, we go back and we recount what happened to Israel. We recount what happened to our brethren, the apostles, what happened to Peter. But the lesson is, don't repeat it. And then when we do, then see what the answers were. Turn back, like Jesus told Peter. You will turn back. Back to faith, back to Jesus Christ, back to God. To sift. Sift you like wheat, he said. You know, when you run a combine, it does all the processes at once that they used to do by hand. In fact, when the disciples with Jesus on the Sabbath day were walking through the grain field and they picked the grain, then they had to thresh it, just a handful. So they would take a head of grain and it has all the beard of the grain on it and the straw, and they would begin to crush it, to thresh it, to work it to separate the grains out. And the oxen would do that in the threshing floor. They would stomp around on the wheat, on the grain, the barley, and stomp around it and run a threshing wheel until the grains were separated from all the beards, they call it, the long pokey things on the heads of the grain. Separate the chaff, separate it from the straw. That's the threshing part of it. And in a threshing machine, there's incredible shaking and pounding going on in this combine, this machine that I used to operate on the farm. It's shaking it violently, trying to get the grain, what's the meat out of what has been labored for, to separate it from what is no longer of use. It served its function. It needs to be put away, sent away. And so as it's doing that, it separates some of this mass, is real fine stuff, dust and the chaff, the little tiny pieces of light stuff that blow away. And then there's the grain itself. And then there's the coarse pieces, the big straw, and sometimes some unthreshed heads of grain. So it needs to be run through the thresher again if all the grain hasn't come out of the head of grain. And so the disciples, in the same way as they're rubbing this grain, then they would make their hand a sieve, I would imagine. I've done that as a boy with the head of grain to eat it. You make a sieve out of your fingers and you shake the grains of wheat and let the big stuff stay and blow the chaff off. All this is happening in a combine, and all this happened on the threshing floors of Israel or any nation that was doing it by hand as well. There's a lot of, if you will, violence going on in the threshing and sifting process. It's kind of sobering. Amos 9 talks about that. I won't turn there for time's sake. But in Amos 9, it says that God declared to Israel that he would shake them and sift them like grain among all the nations. And the picture is it's the grain going through that sieve out to the other nations. He does say none of it will fall to the ground. It won't fail, but it will be shaken and distributed among all the nations. There in Amos 9 and verse 9. And that's important. That's important to understand that the grains of wheat would go through the sieve in order to separate it from the big and the coarse pieces. Because the light pieces would be blown away in this big threshing machine. It's got big fans and it blows and separates out the chaff and the lighter straw. And then as it goes through, the grain itself goes through little grates, little, back in Amos where it talks about it, the word sift, it means like a net or like a loosely woven basket where there's holes that just the size of a grain of wheat that it can go through. And the grain is separated into piles on the threshing floor on the ground. The disciples would have been sifting it into another hand, and if there was more to thresh, they would repeat it again and several times until they just had the grain that they could eat. But there's big stuff and there's little stuff. It all needs to be separated out. And the thing that Amos points out and that we see in these machines that do it for us today is there's a lot of shaking that goes on in the sifting process. A lot of shaking. But that the grain is separated out. Satan wanted to sift the disciples, you see, and in that sieve then, and this is what's striking, is Satan wanted to hold that sieve that had all the big chunks, the big clods of dirt, the big chunks of straw, the big bugs, the big weeds, all the big trash. That's what Satan wanted to keep in the sieve to show. Here's the crop you've been growing. He's the accuser. That's what he wanted to display. See, he didn't want to see the grain. He wanted it sifted out. Isn't that when a lady sifts flour that the fines go through and the big chunks that need further processing stay in the sieve? And so it was that Satan wanted to show, you know, the unusable, the trash. That's what he was after. He wanted to show those impurities, his evidence for accusation. He wanted to hold it out, yes, for God, but also for Peter, or for me, or for you to see. You know, sometimes we're our worst adversaries. We know our weaknesses. We know our challenges. And it demoralizes. It can kill our faith if that's all we see in the sifting process is the chaff and the clods and the impurities. But Jesus prayed. He interceded. He requested. Jesus says, I have prayed for you, specifically Peter, that your faith should not fail. See, it was a different approach to God than what Satan demanded. To trash and thrash. Jesus Christ interceded with pleadings, with a whole different attitude, a different approach to the Father. See, in the spirit realm, there is so much happening that we usually have no understanding, no discernment. Sometimes we can perceive that something's happening. And certainly in the world today, much is happening. But in our lives, personally, individually, much is happening. Yes, God is saving the body of Christ one at a time. Each one of you, one at a time. Much is undiscernible, and yet it's so real, it's so eternal, it's so active, it so affects us because we are the focus, each on our own time. How often has Satan demanded to have access to us? How often? To me, to you. How often has our high priest interceded for you and for me? How often has the Holy Spirit completed our prayers that we don't know how to utter when we're just at our wit's end? Who said, you know, when you're at your wit's end, that's where you find God. Sometimes our life is that way. Jesus did not prevent Satan's demand. He did not prevent Satan from sifting Peter. In fact, the narrative, as we read through what's recorded for us, for our instruction, for our encouragement, for our strength and our support, shows that all of them were sifted in their own way. Each had their own trial. But Jesus Christ did immediately what was the most beneficial. He prayed to preserve and strengthen Simon's faith, because Satan has many fiery darts, many ways to attack us. He wants to reveal our big weaknesses, our little weaknesses. But Jesus prayed that Peter's faith not fail. And the word fail here, I find it interesting. It's like an eclipse of the sun. You know, when the moon comes over and the sun disappears in the middle of the day. The sun didn't disappear, but from our perspective it has. And that's what this word fail means, like the light failing because of an eclipse. The sun is still there and its light still there, but it's just not quite visible to us. And sometimes our faith is that way, especially when Jesus, our intercessor, prays for us that our faith not fail. It might not be visible. We might stumble and fall, but it's still there. And the moon moves on and the sun shines once more. You know, Simon's faith was obscured. He traded it for a period of time for self-defense, didn't he? When he went in, when Jesus was being tried, and he denied Jesus three times. Peter's faith was left out in that critical test, but it's a lesson that we can learn from. I don't know that I'm any better than Peter. If I know anything, I'm a lot less. I have foolish confidence in some areas. And some places I've learned to just be patient and confident in the one who intercedes for me. We can all do that. We can learn these things out of it. Jesus, knowing Simon's failure was imminent, he confidently said to Peter, "When you return." See, he knew. He knew Peter would return. He knew Peter just as he knew Judas, who betrayed him, that Judas would go through it. Oh, Judas was sorry later, and Judas was a different lesson for a different day. John chapter 21, holding our place there in Luke again. John and chapter 21. See, there's one more time when Jesus spoke to Peter specifically by that name, Simon, Simon. John 21 and verse 15, when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And so three times, Simon then gets to answer a different way. He gets to, as deja vu, go back and live it over and give the right answer. Three times. You know, that was painful for Peter. Verse 17, he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. See, he finally learned that much. He finally learned that much. I want to learn that. You can learn that. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, then feed my sheep. Painful, but it was then the fulfillment, the beginning of the fulfillment of Peter's return. And now that he had learned this lesson so powerfully, he could strengthen the other brethren, whether it was just the disciples that he was with or though where he would travel. We too can learn that same thing. Through our trials, wherever we've been tested, that's where we're stronger and where we can help others that need that help. Strengthen your brethren. Establish them and stabilize them. And remember what you went through. Give people space because other people have to go through it. You know, I'd love it if my sons didn't have to go through the mistakes I made. And you know what? They won't. They're going to make their own. But I can't go back and walk in their shoes. I can help them through it. And we can help one another. Simon's sifting had already started back here in Luke chapter 22. Simon's sifting had already started when Satan demanded him. And Jesus warned him about this. And Peter says, I won't go away. I won't desert you. I'm ready to go to prison, to death. And he had faith. And again, that was that self-confidence. He was ready to go. He was eager. It's kind of like Israel was so ready to get out of Egypt, weren't they? But as soon as the trials faced them in the wilderness, they were ready to give up and go back. Go back. That's, again, other lessons for another day. But those things were written for our admonition. But when Jesus said that I've prayed for you, and Peter protested, didn't he? Peter protested, Lord, that's not me. I'm stronger than that. See, he was strong-willed. He was outspoken. He was sure of himself. Judas, in his own way, was sure of himself. And they're both on the wrong side of the fence, aren't they? There's only one sure place to be. See, both were confident in themselves. Both Peter and Judas fell, but only one returned. The one that Jesus Christ had prayed for. He's the one that returned and strengthened and established the rest of the brethren and wherever he went. And now you and me, he's strengthening you and me through these lessons. What a beautiful picture. You know, it's good to have confidence. We need to have confidence. We need to be bold about going forward. But confidence, especially our own personal confidence, is not fact of what our real capability or our real possibility is. Confidence is not evidence of truth. Emotion, and Peter was an emotional, he was a Jew. The Jews by nature emotional and, you know, fired up. But emotion and excitement, his vehemence even. Lord, I would never do that. That was not evidence of facts, was it? He proved otherwise very shortly thereafter. It's not evidence of the truth. And as Paul told the Romans, that You know, even Israel has a zeal for the truth, but without understanding, because they didn't understand themselves and they didn't understand God's way to make people righteous, as it says in that passage. Without knowledge, they have zeal without knowledge. We need to go back and learn these lessons. We get to. What an opportunity. You know, self-deception puffs up. When I'm sure I'm right, that's when I'm the most puffed up. And that's when I'm the most fragile and destined to fall. Sin's deception, it's like leaven. It's a lesson for unleavened bread as well as the fall feast of ingathering. These lessons are timely any time of year. And we have our challenges. We are tested any time of year. Jesus Christ foresaw Simon's progress. He plainly forewarned Simon. And I like that saying that when we're forewarned, we're forearmed. And it's a day and an age to be forewarned and to find out where our armor is and to put on that armor of faith and all that goes with it, because we will be tested. You see, this testing, Peter's trial was played out. Let's look over Luke chapter 22 again, but a little later in this chapter. All these things were written for me and for you. Luke chapter 22, verse 54, then they arrested Jesus, they led him and brought him to the high priest's house, but Peter followed at a distance. He fled at first. It says they all deserted him, but then he turned and he followed. The commentaries will say, you know, he wanted to go defend him, or he just wanted to go see what was happening, curiosity. I don't know what was in Peter's mind. I don't find it really recorded. Each of us, you know, from our own perspective, might put our thoughts in Peter's mind, but the story is here as it's written. And they built a fire in the midst of the court and sat down, and Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him, sat by the fire and looked intently at him and said, "This man was also with him." But he, Peter, denied, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." Where did that switch get flipped that evening? I don't know. You know, sometimes I don't know where my switch will get flipped. Do you know when your weakness will overcome your confidence? We each have a different turning point. Peter turned, and so later he had to return. Again, it was repeated again, the second, verse 59, about an hour passed. Another confidently affirmed, saying, "Surely this fellow was also with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you're saying." Other places it said he almost violently blurted out a curse, not profanity like we hear in the world around us, but a curse on himself, like the Jews saying, "His blood be upon us and our children." It just spouted out as it expressing his emotion, that he just wanted to eliminate any of that talk that I'm with him. But while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at me. Or the Lord turned and looked at you. And we remembered the word of the Lord, how he'd said to him, "We will stumble, but I have prayed for you. When you return, strengthen and establish the brethren. Take what you've learned and use it." Of course, that's not quite what it says. That talks about Peter's. Peter went out and wept bitterly. We're ashamed when we stumble and fall. But God stands us up again. You know, vehemence going up the scale, getting louder, having to push harder, all these warning signs that Peter could have heeded if he'd been of a mind to do that. Sometimes we can hear the warnings, our own warnings, as we try to force something to be. And I find that's when I most wish I was able to hear and listen, or that somebody would see it and intercede for me. Should be a warning, a wake up. I can break my bad habits, my emotional reactions, because that's not faith. That's not faith. Emotional reactions are not faith. So, Peter could not persuade those that he was around, that he was not part of them. And he didn't persuade himself either, did he? But it was that look in the eye from Jesus that woke him up. It woke him up. His faith had been set aside, had been obscured. His loyalty at that moment was a vapor, eclipsed. He'd kind of got tunnel vision, hadn't he? He could only see self-preservation and preservation of his reputation or whatever it was he was trying. I don't think he feared for his life, did he? When they just said, you know, he was with him. He wasn't on trial. Jesus was on trial. He just feared for his relationship with those that he was with, how they looked at him, how they saw him, how he wanted to present himself. It was a matter of self-preservation. And self is usually not very rational. It's not very steadfast. But what does the Scripture say? To love our neighbor as ourself. We need to love ourself. Find what's loving in us. If we don't love ourself, if we can't find where we come back and return and we're strengthened and stronger, how are we going to love our neighbor if we can't love ourselves, even knowing we stumble and fall? I stumble and fall. Years and years and years ago on the farm was one of the hardest things I ever did. I never grew up hearing the words, "I love you." After I grew up and left, I came back and looked my daddy in the eye and said, "Daddy, I love you." My mother says that just about knocked that man over. It wasn't too long after that he could say that he loved me. And I began to learn that I can love me too. And you can love you. There's something lovable in all of us. That's why God called us here. Because He knows we're weak. But He knows that He who is in us is greater than the accuser. Love ourselves. What if in our contentions, our emotional reactions, what if we begin to defend one another? If we're in a dispute, now Peter wasn't in a dispute with him, but what if Peter had spoke up and says, "Yes, I was with him." But what if we're in a dispute and we love our neighbor more than ourselves, and instead of defending myself, I defend you who I'm having the contention with? Now, there's a challenge I haven't learned to master yet. I've attempted it and I will continue. But turning things around, that's part of the lesson, this is turning it around. Peter saw failure. He went out and wept. He saw then that Peter himself suddenly realized he was holding the sieve with all the trash in it. He didn't have to wait for Satan to sift him. He'd done it himself, and here I am, and this is all I can see. That's all he could see. Sometimes that's all we can see. But Jesus prayed for Peter, knowing he would return. I think I've said that a few times. I think I'm going to get that in here. I hope that you can get that in there. That you too stumble, get up, and return. Get up and return. It takes faith to look, to see, to recognize and accept our failures. And then, even though we fall, or like all the disciples fled, to come back, to return, to be a help of others. At what point did Peter begin to turn back? You know, he hardened his heart at some point and denied Christ, but then at some point he began to see more clearly. You know, maybe it was when he went out to weep. I don't know. But we can look at what happened to our forefathers. We can look at what happened to Peter. We can help then one another when we see ourselves and each other struggling along. We are forewarned. We are forearmed. Peter wept. He repented. He returned. And then he went to work doing God's work. And you know, sifting is not just for taking the trash and keeping it. Sifting is for good. It's like panning for gold. Now, I really never done that. I'm sure some of you have. But I've seen it done, and I think I understand. And they have machines to do that, just like they have machines to thresh grain and to separate it out. But the purpose of the machinery, of the sifting, of the panning, is to come up with the grain or the gold. It is a good process. And the more we can sift out what is not desirable, the more, you know, useful we are. The more, I would imagine, there on the farm, we would run our grain through the combine and put it in the granary. And my mother would go out and get a bowl full of grain, take it in the house and put it in the grinder and make flour. And make bread. There were 8 of us kids, and she made a lot of bread. We loved it. We grew up on bread. You know, there was probably a few weed seeds, maybe a few bugs, you know, but the grain was there, you know, and it's God that knows. He makes up when some of it's still contaminated, you know, when the gold is sifted and there's, you know, the dark black sand and some of the things that just don't want to sift out have to be picked out. You know, God takes care of those things. He does. But we want the volume. Trials and testing usually serve to reveal and improve our strengths. Our strengths are tested to make them stronger. Okay, I fail. Okay, you stumble and fall. So, repent, return. God has an answer for every failure. Hebrews. Let's go over to Hebrews. And chapter 10. Powerful passage. Same old thing. The truth is always the same old thing. The same old opportunities. The same old lessons that we each get to experience, each in our own time. It doesn't happen to all of us all at once, but it happens to all of us. And then, Hebrews chapter 10, in verse 23, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. See, he's faithful. We have faith, but our faith is strongest when it's his faith in us, isn't it? And let us consider one another then, like Peter, in order to stir up love and good works, and not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as we see the day approaching. In this day and age, it seems the day is thundering upon us. But I don't know. It really doesn't matter. I believe it is, but God's time doesn't matter what I believe. On that account, his timing is his. And if I live out the life in the flesh, so be it. I might think it otherwise. But as we see that day approaching, see verse 35, therefore don't cast away your confidence. Peter had confidence, but he had to replace that confidence in the proper place, on the one who had prayed for him, the one who died for him, the one who was raised for him. and the one who lives to intercede for him. Verse 39, but we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but we are of those who believe to the saving of the soul. And we get to help each other do it.